Well, happy Mother's Day, everybody. How are you guys doing this morning? Good? All right, you feeling good about Mother's Day? All right, that's good. That's good. Hey, just want to wish you moms a happy Mother's Day. We hope that you've had a great morning. Hey, you're starting off right. You in church. All right, that's good. That's good. But we hope that you have a rest of the good day. We hope that everything is perfect for you and that you just get to relax and enjoy yourself and your kids are like serving you all day long, right? Because that's what they do. On Mother's Day, yeah, a little bit, supposed to, but don't, okay. That's funny, because somebody this week, they asked me, they're like, so what's the topic for Mother's Day? Like, what are you talking about this Sunday? And I was like, well, you know, we've been going through Luke, so the next thing that Jesus actually teaches on is humility, okay? And they're like, tell me, you are not speaking about humility on Mother's Day. I'm like, hey, I didn't get to pick it, okay? Jesus, it's not my fault he didn't cooperate with our 21st century holiday schedule, all right? That would have been a lot easier, but he didn't do that. And he knew about it, but he just didn't do it. But as most of you know, we have been going through the book of Luke since before Christmas. We've been studying this. And basically what Luke is Luke is just a document that was written by a Greek doctor named Luke, who lived during the time of Jesus, but he did not know Jesus personally. And so Luke, he had heard all the rumors and he heard these stories about this Jesus guy and he was doing all these things and he was saying all these crazy stuff. He was just doing all this incredible stuff. And so Luke decides to investigate. And so he goes and he starts tracking down the eyewitnesses. This would have taken him probably a few years of his life to do. So he goes and he has the conversations, he asks the tough questions, and he gathers all of the information that he gets. He compiles it all down into one orderly document, and that's the book of Luke that we all have in our Bibles today. Now, the thing that I want to remind us about is that Luke is, when he's writing this, he is not writing, like, in his mind, religious literature. Okay, that's not what he's doing. He's not writing this saying, oh man, I'm going to write something about Jesus and I really hope that this makes it into the Bible someday and hey, they might even name this after me. That'd be sweet. Like, he's not doing that. That's not his purpose. What Luke is doing is he is simply documenting the life of a man who claimed to be God. And it happens to be the most, as we look back over the last 2,000 years, he happens to be the most important person, most important man in all of human history, all right? He's the most influential person to have ever had lived, this man named Jesus of Nazareth. And so far in our story, Jesus, he's launched his movement. We watched that. And he has spent the last two-ish years traveling around from town to town to town and village to village to village. And he's basically teaching people what God is like. And he's healing people and he's helping people. And as you can imagine, when he's doing this, and there's a lot of incredible stuff, as you can imagine, people flock to him. I mean, crowds upon crowds upon crowds come to see the things that he is doing and come to hear the things that he is saying. In fact, Mark, in his account of Jesus' life, he says that so many people wanted to hear the things that Jesus was saying. So many crowds would gather around Jesus and flocked around Jesus wherever he went that Jesus, there came a point where he couldn't even go into town anymore because there were so many people and so many crowds and just so much congestion wherever he went. So he had to stay, at times he had to stay out in the countryside, he had to stay out in the outskirts, and people from all the surrounding villages and all the surrounding crowds would come to listen to him, and he would teach them. And so he's been doing that for a couple years, but then we talked about a few weeks ago how Jesus changes his, like, mindset. He changes kind of his mission. Instead of going from town to town to town and teaching people, he gets his mind, he shifts to focusing on Jerusalem, which is south by you know, days and days of travel. He decides he's going to head to Jerusalem, even though he knows what's in store for him, even though he knows that someday he will be gruesomely killed. And so along the way, he's not in any hurry to get there. Along the way, he's stopping in all the towns and all the villages, but he is generally heading in the direction of Jerusalem. And Luke tells us that on one Saturday afternoon, along the way, he stops in the town, and it happened to be the Sabbath, Saturday. And so when he went to eat, he says, then he went to eat at the house of one of the leading Pharisees who are in town. Now, Pharisees, we've talked about them a whole bunch. These guys were like the top religious leaders of their day. I mean, these guys are super religious. They're leaders. They're influential guys. Generally, these guys did not approve of Jesus, which is interesting because we view Jesus as like the ultimate religious guy, and here's the religious people that are rejecting him. And so these guys, really one of the main reasons why they didn't approve of Jesus was because Jesus didn't follow all their religious rules, All right, he didn't practice religion like they thought religion should be practiced. But somehow here, all right, Jesus gets the invite to this guy's house, but they were watching him closely. And there in front of him happened to be a man whose body was swollen with fluid. Now, it's interesting. You got to remember who Luke is, right? He's a doctor. Okay, so he's like all into this stuff. It was like Peter writing this stuff, because Peter was probably there. If it was Peter writing, he'd just be like, yeah, man, there's this dude who was sitting across the table who was like, I mean, he did not look good. Like, he was jacked up, man. Like, that's how Peter would describe it. Here's Luke, Dr. Luke. He's just like, okay, all right. And you know, he was super interested when the eyewitness that he was talking to that kind of corroborated this story, you know, when that guy's just like, okay, yeah, there's this guy. He's like, tell me more about that guy. What was his problem? What's going on? What was his issue? He's like, okay. And so he writes down, he says his body was swollen with fluid. He's got this issue, and he happens to be sitting right in front of Jesus. Now, I don't know why this guy or how this guy got here. It sure looks to me, and a lot of scholars believe that this was a complete trap, okay? Meaning they placed this guy who had this issue in front of Jesus just to see if Jesus is going to do anything, if Jesus is going to heal them. Because you got to remember, all right, this was the Sabbath day. The religious leaders, they had this big rule that you cannot heal anybody on the Sabbath. That's not, unless it was a life or death situation, that was like off limits. And so they probably, it's a trap, but they want to see what Jesus is going to do. So here you go. You got this guy. He's all swollen up. He can barely move. And he's just, you know, it's just not a good thing for him. Have you ever experienced something like that? All right. Like you sprain your ankle, it gets all swollen. You know what I'm talking about? Is that hard to move? Okay. Or you break a bone or anything like that. For me, last week, my parents, they brought home my 93-year-old grandmother to Ohio from Colorado. That's where she lives. And so she's going to be here for about a month, which is awesome. And I love talking with her. And the second night that she was here, I think this was like early Wednesday morning, she fell and she broke her wrist. Okay. And she broke her wrist, so they go, and they got her, you know, she got a cast on, she's got everything all, she's all fixed up. And it's one of those things where I got to tell my dad, I'm like, hey, Dad, here's the deal, okay? I want you to listen to me, Dad, you know. I'm trusting you to take care of my grandmother. And you're not doing a very good job right now. Because here she is, 93 years old, she's never broken a bone in her life, and now she breaks one under your watch. Like, this is just not, I'm just saying, the facts are the facts, okay? And so Thursday, I go in to see, I stop by to see my grandma, and we notice, we're kind of talking about it, her fingers are like super swollen, okay? Maybe this has happened to you at some point in your life, but she's got her wedding ring on her finger, and so it's like, you know, swollen, and you're like, dude, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I'm no doctor, but like, that ain't good. Like, we got to get that like ring off. It's going to cut off circulation or something. It just, you know, it's just not a good thing. And so as my dad and I are discussing this, we do what every good son and grandson would do is we go to Google, you know, go to the internet. What do we do about a ring stuck on, you know, somebody's finger? And so we go and we gather all the tools that Google says we're going to need. It's like, you know, things that are like pliers and floss and Vaseline and ice. And after a lot of pulling and a lot of massaging and trying to get that thing off, we finally got the ring off her swollen finger. And I was just thinking about this week as I am studying this. I'm like, hey, I just kind of experienced something about swollenness, like even this week. You know, I'm thinking about this guy. This guy didn't just have swollen fingers. This guy was swollen really over his entire body. And again, for him, he happens to be sitting in front of Jesus. And so here's the people at this dinner and the host and the guy who had invited them. I mean, they've all heard the rumors. They know who Jesus is. They've heard the stories about him healing people and doing kind of incredible things. And everybody's thinking it, but nobody wants to say it. Everybody is wondering, is Jesus going to do one of his like magic tricks on this guy? Is he going to do it? All right? Would he dare to do it? He's in this religious guy's house who is completely against that because he's got to follow his rule. Like, how is Jesus going to respond? Is he going to sniff the trap? Is he going to take the bait? Like, what is going to happen here? And so in response, Luke says, Jesus, he asked the experts, the law experts, and the Pharisees. He says, hey, I got a question for you. I want you to think through this real quick. You tell me, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, on Saturday, or not? All right, I know your rules. I know you're all about your rules. But I just want to let you, is it lawful? Should I do this or should I not? All right, it's interesting. We talked about this a little bit last week. The reason why the religious leaders had this rule, and they actually get it from the Old Testament, is not exactly. They change it, right, to fit their needs, which is not good. But what they're doing is they're taking it from the Old Testament. One of the Ten Commandments is remember the Sabbath. And what we see is from the beginning of time, even God did this in creation, is that God has given us a rhythm for life, for the way that we should live our life. And the rhythm of life, really, the way that that looks is we are to work hard for 6 days a week, and then we are to completely rest one day. All right, some of us, we don't know what looking hard means. Some of us, we don't know what resting looks like. And so that's the way that we are supposed to live. And so these guys, they took that rule. They're like, okay, work hard. All right, 6 days a week, completely rest one day a week. That completely rest, we're not supposed to work. We're not supposed to do anything that day. We're supposed to relax and kind of like chill. And so these religious people, they created a bunch of rules, rule after rule after rule, so that they wouldn't come close to breaking God's rule. And so they had things, again, we looked at this last week. They had things like you had to count your steps on the Sabbath. All right, because if you walk too far, if you took too many steps, God might consider that work, and then you're breaking God's rule, okay? They were not allowed to spit in the dirt. You can spit on a rock, that's totally fine. You can't spit into dirt because technically that's making mud, and technically God might consider that as work, and so you can't do that, right? They had the rule that you couldn't light a candle, okay? Because technically that's building a fire, and maybe God might technically view building a fire as work, so you can't do that. All right, you couldn't carry anything. You also couldn't help anybody physically unless it was a life or death situation. And so they had all these rules, and it sounds pretty relaxing, doesn't it? Like, here's this day that God says, I want you to completely relax one day, and here's these religious people. They're like, yeah, relax and follow all these rules, okay? Count your steps, do all this stuff. Like, Mom, does that sound relaxing? Okay, yeah, some of you moms are like, that sounds like my everyday life. I'm thinking about this, doing this, counting those things, like you're doing all these things. See, these well-intentioned religious people, they loved their rules. They're all about their rules. They're rule people, rule followers. It's funny because the incident that we looked at last week, which is very similar, happens on the Sabbath. This may have just happened a week prior to this place, okay? Probably in two different towns and that are near each other. But last week, Jesus, he's in church doing his thing with all the religious people there, right? They're all watching him. They're all making sure he's not doing anything wrong. And that week, Jesus doesn't ask any questions. He doesn't ask their permission, right? What he does is he just sees this lady that needs his help, and he just heals her. And then, if you remember what happens, the passive-aggressive religious leader addresses the crowd and kind of yells at Jesus through the crowd, saying, hey, guys, you guys can't be doing this. This is not right. You guys have just broken a rule. And then Jesus has to correct him, and it's like completely awkward. Remember that? Kind of how that goes? Right? It's interesting. That's what he did like last week. But this time, before Jesus does anything, he just straight up asks them. I mean, he like puts them on the spot. He's like, hey, question for you. All right, you know what I'm about to do? All right, you set this up this way. You know that this guy's got issues, and you set him right in front of me. And he straight up asks them, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Should I do this or should I not? And they don't want to answer the question, because if they say no, then they're like heartless. Right? And if they say yes, then they've just broken their own religious rule. So Jesus has trapped them. And so they kept silent. You ever been there where someone's asking you a question and they kind of, you know, you're in an argument and, you know, they've completely just won and you have nothing to say. You're just like, oh, okay, that's what just happened. And so he took the man, even though he knows it's a trap. Even though he knows that this is going to cause some issues, he takes the bait, he walks into the trap, and he decides to help this man anyway, and he healed him, and then he sent him on his way. Now, when he did this, everybody at the table, and there's a bunch of people here, everybody at the table, everybody around the table is silent. Nobody knows what to say. They can't believe it. I mean, here on one hand, Jesus just did a miracle before their very eyes. I mean, they never seen anything like this. Like, this dude was jacked up, okay? And Jesus just fixed them just using his words. It was crazy. But then on the other hand, Jesus just broke the religious rule because he did it on a Saturday. You can't do it on a Saturday. You can't do that. And so some people are astonished and other people are offended. And Jesus, check this out, and Jesus knows it. And he's totally okay with it. And so he looks at the people sitting around the table, and he gives them the same argument that he gave last week. He says, hey, question, which of you has a son or an ox that falls into a well, like into a pit, that you will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day. He's saying, hey, when you have like an animal that falls into a pit, or maybe it's even your own son that falls into a well or something, do you wait until the next day to rescue him? No. See, his point that he's making is he's saying, you guys make exceptions for Sabbath day work rule that you made up for your animals and for your family, but not for this guy. Your rules are so inconsistent. And he's saying it is messed up, and they could find no answer to these things. And things have gotten awkward, all right? You've been there in situations like that, I'm assuming, with like a group of people, like kind of a group setting, where someone will say something that you know offends that person, and that person says something that you know offends this other person, and things have been said, and you just like, you'd give anything to not be there at that moment. You know what I'm talking about? That might be at work, that might be in any place, all right? I'm guessing this is how everybody felt at this point. And so Jesus knows this, and Jesus uses this opportunity to teach, and he decides to tell them a quick story. Luke says he tells them a parable, which is just a short little story, to those who were invited. And so he noticed how when, as they got there, that they would all choose the best places for themselves. All right, so Jesus, think about it, he has just called them out on their dumb religious rules. And now he's about to call them out on their lack of humility, meaning and their selfishness. And so because everybody is trying to get the best seats at the table, okay, we all know how that is. This is kind of how it is growing up, right? Like you get to the table, mom calls for dinner, you're trying to get like to your favorite seat. Or we all do this even as little kids where it's like you walk out the door because you're all leaving somewhere. And what do you yell? Shotgun, all right, because you're trying to get the best seat, which is passenger seat, you know what I'm talking about? And then inevitably what happens, that usually works like 85, maybe 90% of the time, but sometimes your sibling hates you, or not hates you, maybe doesn't like you so much or is so mad at you, and so what do? It's like they run to the door and they completely ignore the shotgun rule, which is so messed up, and then it's like survival of the fittest at that point, you know what I'm talking about? Okay, kind of like that, all right? That's what we do. We even do this today. Like, think about it. Probably none of us in this room when we go to Walmart, we don't park in the hundreds of open parking spots near the gas station. Like, we don't do that. What do? No, we try to get the best spot that we can before the next guy gets it. And then what really ticks us off is if we're waiting on a spot and it's a really good one, and then somebody completely does what no man or woman should ever do in our society. They swoop in and they take that spot before you. You are so mad at them, right? That's what we do, all right? Some of you moms, you're really, really good at when you're at the Walmart or wherever, you're really good at just like circling, kind of hovering around. You know the parking spots. You see the people walking out. You're following them to their car with your eyes. You know what I'm talking about? And so you are doing all that. Why? Because you want to get the best one. Okay? Well, think about it. We do this like when we go to movies. When we go to a movie, we look for the best seats, which is the back section, six rows up, exactly in the middle. That's where we want to be every time. All right, when we go through the McDonald's drive-thru, we do the same thing, right? When we're in line and the line starts splitting, right? You know what I'm talking about? Because they got the dual thing. All right, what are we doing? We're analyzing. We're crunching the numbers. We're like, okay, well, this guy ordered this. Now he had a quick order, so I think they're going to go faster. So we're trying to, am I going right? Am I going left? I don't know. And this is you trying to decide all to be, so that you could get your food the fastest for you. I mean, this is, we all do this. Ironically, think about it. We live our life fighting for the best places for ourselves. And that's exactly what these people are doing. And so Jesus says, hey, let me just give you a piece of advice. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, okay, when you're inviting to a wedding reception, okay, or a dinner kind of like this that they're all sitting at, he says, here, don't sit at the place of honor, meaning don't sit at like the head table. Okay, don't do that. That's not cool. All right, because a more distinguished person than you may have been invited by your host. Meaning he's saying, hey, when you go to like, let's say he's just using a wedding reception as an example. Okay, you wouldn't go to the head table. We all understand this because you expect that that's where the more important people like the groom or the bride will be sitting. Okay, or the best man or whoever. He says, so don't do that. If you do that, then the one who invited both of you may come and say to you, hey, you're sitting at the head table. You really need to give up your place to this guy because he's the groom, right? He's important. And then in humiliation, that'd be super embarrassing, you will proceed to take the lowest place, which would be the kid's table in the back corner, right, where they're like sneezing and coughing and like spilling stuff all the time, okay? We hear them, but we don't try to look over there. He says, instead, when you are invited, go sit at the lowest place. He's like, why don't you try this? Why don't you try sitting at the kids' table first? So that when the one who invited you comes, he's going to see you sitting at the kids' table, and then he'll come to you. He'll say to you, hey, friend, you don't sit here. I got a better spot for you. Move up higher, and then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests. He says, for everybody who exalts himself will be humble. See, this is what we do. We work very hard to show everybody around us how awesome we are and how smart we are and how competent we are. I mean, just look at your social media. That's the easy way to look. I mean, look at our Facebooks and our TikToks and our Instagrams and our Snapchats or whatever it might be. All right? What we do is we project a life that's way better than our life actually is. All right? It's true. Like, that's honest. Like, moms, think about it. You ain't posting a picture of the kid who just peed all over your floor. Right? You're not posting that. You don't want nobody to know. You're not projecting that. Like, we are all about exalting ourselves. In fact, we've made new terms, all right, to kind of fit this, like the term selfie. All right, I was looking this up this week. Did you know that there's over 92 million selfies taken a day? All right, think about it. That's like 92 million times in a day, every day, you got people with their phones taking pictures of themselves. We're all about ourselves. In fact, they've had to make new categories, like for death. There's a new category called death by selfie, okay? Because people die a lot of times we're doing it. And death by selfie has actually exceeded death by shark. That's, you know, when people are like leaning over the edge of the waterfall and they're like, click, click, and then they're like, ah, you know, that type of thing. And they're gone, all right? But they got their picture. I was reading up on one guy. You should read Death by Selfie. It's sad, but it's also like, I don't know, maybe that person, like, I don't know, Gene Poole might get, I don't know. That's mean. I shouldn't say that. That's the evil part of me thinking that stuff. But I read about one guy who, he wanted to get a picture of he was trying to get a picture of 1.5-ton walrus, and so he got as close as he could, and the walrus got him, and they found it later on his phone lived. It survived, all right, and that's how they knew what happened. All right, so like, not good. And by the way, if you're a grown man in here and you're not sure what a selfie is, okay, I just want to, I respect that. But what you do is you just take your phone, you hold it up, okay, and then you bring it down, and then you bring it down a little bit lower, a little bit lower. Then you just go ahead and lay it down because you're a grown man. Shouldn't be taking selfies. I'm just saying. We live our life where everything's about us. This is what we all do this. I do this. We live our life. Everything is about us. And look what Jesus is doing here. Jesus is calling us out. That's what he's doing. He's calling us out. He says, everyone who exalts himself someday, this is not a good humble, someday will be humbled, implying by me is what he's saying. And then the one who humbles himself someday will actually be exalted, he's saying, by me. By the way, can I just point out what humility is not? Humility is not thinking less of yourself. Right? Some of us, we get this confused. All right, you walking around saying, hey, I'm a loser, I'm a nobody, I'm nothing, that's not being humble. All right, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is actually thinking of yourself less. That's what it is. See, humble people don't talk about how much of a loser they are. Humble people actually don't talk much about themselves at all. That's the difference. See, that's the problem with talking about humility. It's funny because the people who need to hear it the most are the people who are least likely to hear it. Like, raise your hand. Like, how many people are really, really, really good at being humble? Okay? Nobody wants to be that guy. So we all see the trap there. Right? That's the same thing that's going on with this dinner party, with these people who are sitting at the table with Jesus. Everybody, I mean, can you just imagine what everybody's thinking? They don't know Jesus personally, and here he is. He's this famous, like, teacher. He's this famous rabbi. He's stepped on the scene. He's super popular. He doesn't have the credentials. He doesn't have the schooling that they all have. And so, but here he is, and he just healed a guy in front of him. And now, he's talking about how you are all about getting the best spot. And it's just like, if these important people, if they weren't offended that Jesus just broke the religious rules, they're definitely offended now. And there would have been so much tension in this room. And what's crazy is Jesus, he's not done. He also said to the one who had invited him, this was the host, This is the rich dude who owns the place, the guy who invited Jesus to dinner, all right, the host. And I'm assuming the disciples are there, and they're probably sitting next to Jesus, and maybe a few of them at least, but they're like nudging him, like, don't do it, Jesus, just don't do it. All right, don't, not the host. Like, this guy's influential. This guy invited us over. Like, he's the one feeding us. And Jesus is like, I'm going to do it. He said to the one who invited him, he says, hey, just let me give you some advice here. All right, when you give a lunch or a dinner, like what we're doing right here, he says, don't invite your friends. Right? In which case, what he's actually saying, he's like, hey, don't invite these people. Why would you invite these people here? Again, this is so awkward. Can you feel it? A little bit. It is awkward. He says, don't invite your friends or your brothers or your sisters or your relatives or your rich neighbors. All right, don't invite them. Right? Because the only reason you're doing it is so that they might invite you back and then you will be repaid. And he's saying, hey, that's the reason why you're doing all this. I can see right through you. He says, on the contrary, when you host a banquet, invite those who are poor, maimed, lame, or blind. Like, invite all the people that have all the issues. And then you actually be blessed because they cannot repay you. So you won't be tempted to invite somebody just so it's actually selfishness. You won't be tempted to invite somebody just so you could get something out of it later. Invite somebody who can't do anything for you. Then you don't have to deal with that temptation. For then you will be repaid at the resurrection of righteousness. Meaning someday when you get to heaven, I will personally repay you. All right, that's what will happen. See, he notices here that everyone there are rich and influential, right? He's looking around. He's like, okay, that guy's rich. That guy's rich. That guy's got a bunch of money. That guy is in charge of a whole bunch of stuff. And Jesus, he's there, and we get it. He's not rich. He had the potential to do, like, miracles and tricks and stuff, which obviously had just happened. And so Jesus, he usually got invited because he was super popular. But what Jesus is doing is he's calling the host out in front of everybody in the middle of dinner. He's saying the only reason why you're inviting these people here, this guy and that guy and that person, is that you hope that they will invite you to all of their stuff. See, he went out and invited the who's who. And he probably did this often. This was extremely often in their culture. It's often in our culture as well. Right? Dinners like this is a place where business decisions were made and relationships were built and a bunch of networking was done and deals were struck. Right? We do this again. We do this today. But at the end of the day, what Jesus is pointing out here is he's saying, you aren't hosting this dinner out of the generosity of your heart. You're not. He's saying you're hosting this dinner to advance you. See, Jesus, he looks at the heart. He's saying you're hosting this dinner to advance, to exalt you. The whole dinner is actually about you, is what Jesus is saying in front of the entire table. And the people at the table, they don't know what to think. Jesus has just taken this conversation to another level of awkwardness. And what these people who, without knowing, right, got the privilege of having dinner with God, what these people didn't understand is that Jesus was the perfect example of humility and he was sitting right in front of them. In fact, Jesus is literally on his way to give up his life for them and for us. In fact, a few years later, Paul describes this for us. He describes exactly what Jesus did. He says, Jesus, who existing in the form of God, meaning he was God, he had all the attributes of God. He did not consider equality with God as something to be exploited, meaning he did not consider, like, he had everything that God would want, that God had. He had it all. He had everything. It was his right, but he didn't use it, all right, to benefit himself. Instead, what he did was he emptied himself. All right, it's like this idea that he's saying, hey, Jesus had all the power and all the glory, and he had angels that were constantly singing to him and angels that were declaring. They constantly were shouting to him 24/7, calling him holy, 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 as Jesus sat on the throne room in the throne room of God, and all was his by right. Like, he owned it, and he had it, and he had it all. But at the same time, he didn't consider it as something to be used for his own advantage, like we would. Instead, he emptied it. He had all the power, he had all the glory, and he emptied it. How? By assuming the form of a servant, meaning God of the universe came here, down here to the dirt, to serve. How, taking on the likeness of humanity, he wrapped himself in a human body. And when he had come as a man, Paul says, which is even crazier, It says he humbled himself by becoming obedient to who? Obedient to his creation, to the point of death, even death on a cross. Even the worst way to go. He's saying God humbled himself, meaning he was a big deal. He was actually a big deal, but never acted like a big deal. Meaning he never walked around playing the God card saying, hey, you can't do that to me. I'm God. He didn't do that. He never leveraged his who he was for his own advantage. In fact, he made himself a nobody for us. It's the ultimate example of humility. And think about it. These people, 2,000 years ago, on this specific day, on this Saturday, these people got to have lunch with him in their own home. And instead of focusing on who he was and why he was there, they focused on themselves, fighting for the best seat and advancing their career, trying to gain influence, while Jesus, who's God of the universe wrapped in a human body, was on his way to die for them. Think about it. What would that level of humility in your life look like? What would it look like? How would that change the way you interact with the people around you? Like, think about it. What would choosing to lose look like? I'm not talking about losing games. I'm talking about losing in life. We all live life in all different areas of life. We're just competing with the people around us. What would that look like if we chose to lose? What would it look like if we let somebody else go first, even though we were there first? What would it look like if we let somebody else take that idea, even though it was our idea? What would it look like if we let somebody else take credit, even though we earned it? See, it's the opposite of how we normally think. And if you're like me and you're thinking about this week, or, you know, you're just like, well, they're going to take advantage of me, all right? They're going to walk all over me. That's what will happen. See, there you go again. That's it. It's that thinking. It's in us. It's a part of us. We are all about us. And so, moms, this might not be the most heartwarming Mother's Day message today, but if we could just master humility, and if we could learn it, and if we could do it, it would improve every aspect of our life. Right? We'd be better moms. We'd be better dads. We'd be better husbands and better wives. We'd be better employees at work. We'd be better bosses and better managers. All right, we'd have way less stress, way less anxiety, way less worry. It'd be better for us mentally. It'd be better for us emotionally. Jesus is saying, it's just good for us. And he's saying, and it's right. So that's something that I just want to, as a church family, this is something I want us to think about this week. As we go have lunch with our moms, or, you know, go do whatever we do on Mother's Day afternoon. And as we wake up tomorrow morning, and as we continue our normal weekday routine, it's something we need to think about. How can I intentionally be humble? How can I intentionally show humility? Not to, wow, look how humble I am, but to look more like Jesus. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. And humility is not an easy thing. It's not in us. It's not part of us. It's not something that we're just like, you know, we're naturally good at. But you've called us to be humble anyway. And Lord, we thank you for you. You gave us the perfect example of what it means to be humble, what it means to actually show true humility. You, God of the universe, came down to the dirt, born in a barn, lived a perfect life, allowed us to put you to death, and even death on a cross, even the worst death. But you did that for us. And we thank you so much for that. Can't thank you enough. God, we need your help. Lord, we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.